They say that the Nile is a gift, its waters flowing through this dry land bringing life. It's definitely a sight to behold. I find myself stopping and gazing out at the river whenever I go to the markets. Today a large ship has docked. Roman soldiers stand guard. They're collecting corn for Rome because of Augustus, the great and powerful Roman emperor, the one who brought down the pharaohs who ruled in Egypt for thousands of years. They call him the sturdy armed one with great strength, the youth sweet of love, ruler of rulers. When Augustus defeated the Egyptians, it is said that he took back with him ancient black obliques. He created gold coins with his face on one side and the crocodile on the other, all signaling the defeat of this once mighty power. I see that ship and quickly pick up the supplies I need and head back home. Seeing all the tribute and gifts being given to the emperor makes me think of my son. What gifts can I give him? Not jewels or crops or animals, we're just trying to scrape by as it is. What gifts can I give in this time of isolation? First, I give him the gift of story. I've started to tell my stories at night. This is such a precious time for the both of us. My son nestles in, asking me to repeat the stories I've already shared so that each night our storytelling time grows longer and longer. He never seems to get tired of hearing them, and if I get a detail wrong, he'll step in and tell the story for me. I begin this bedtime ritual with these words. The day began unremarkably. Although perhaps I should have known something strange was about to happen because I stepped into an empty room. There was never an empty room in my house growing up. One day you will meet them, all your aunts and uncles and cousins, your grandparents. We pause then as Jesus takes to naming all these people, stumbling over some of their names, but together we trace through our family tree before I resume my story. But that morning, I walked into an empty room. A shadow fell across my doorway, a flutter. I turned and saw a person who wasn't quite a person suddenly in front of me. Jesus' eyes widen and he leans in. I saw an angel. The angel said I'd be pregnant. I brushed the black hair away from Jesus' face. I remember how I stood there by the doorway long after the angel left, trying to process, waiting for further instruction. But all I could hear were the pigeons cooing. So I picked up the basket I'd come in for and decided to just keep on going, act as if nothing had changed at all. Of course, everything had changed, and here is the proof lying beside me now. I continue. Weeks went by. I didn't say a word to anyone, though I found myself pausing before doorways, wary of entering them, jumping when someone would come up behind me when I wasn't expecting it. Your dad noticed how twitchy I was and asked if I was feeling stressed planning our upcoming wedding. And I reassured him that I was fine, though maybe just feeling a little under the weather. Under the weather we all were. We'd had some unusual few weeks of rain. Low grey clouds that just seemed to be stuck, loitering around, making everything so cold and miserable and messy, mud tracks through the house. I don't tell Jesus about the tension in Nazareth at that time. So many men struggling to find work. The talk of revolt that happened late at night as another bottle of wine was opened, and it wasn't just Egypt who'd been conquered by the emperor. We are all under his thumb. I don't tell Jesus how isolated I felt. My friends and family asked if I was right. I fobbed them off, just a little under the weather, I kept saying. It will soon pass, like this rain. I don't tell Jesus how my mother took me aside one day, pulled me up the stairs to our roof where we could have a moment of privacy, and hissing asked me, what had I done? How could I shame my family like this? She poked my slightly rounded belly and said, you think I don't know what it looks like when a girl is pregnant? I've seen it all. Not this, I muttered. What did you say to me, she asked. Not this, I mumbled. There was an angel in our house, in our doorway. He appeared and said, the power of the highest will come upon me. I will carry a child and give birth to a son. My mother slapped me. She hadn't done that in a long time. It shut me up. You girl, always praying, always asking questions about God, wanting to listen to the rabbis at the synagogue, you... And then she turned away. You need to leave before everyone discovers the truth, before you embarrass us further. You need to go and see your Aunt Elizabeth. Stay hidden while we figure this out. How about Joseph, I asked. I need to talk to him first. I need to explain. My mother just shook her head before climbing back down the stairs. I leave this out for now. And what I do tell my son is how wonderful it was to spend time with my aunt and uncle away from the rain and the politics into the hill country. I say to him, the moment I stepped through their doorway, a wave of warmth passed through me. My aunt hurried towards me. I hadn't seen her in a little while, though I'd heard the news of her unexpected pregnancy. I'd never seen her smile so wide and generous. As we parted, she grabbed my hand and placed it on her. Do you feel that? She asked. Can you feel him kicking? Blessed are you among women, and blessed is the child you will bear. I felt a baby fluttering underneath my hand. He was strong. And for a moment I did feel blessed. I said she was blessed too. My aunt had waited for us such a long time. I desperately wanted a child and it hadn't happened, so she poured her love and energy into all her nieces and nephews, including myself. She ushered me into her house and we sat down, eating goat's cheese and bread, and she told me her story of her husband Zachariah, chosen to serve in the temple, walking into the Holy of Holies and seeing an angel at the right side of the altar of incense. I asked, what did the angel look like? But she said she didn't know. Only that the angel spoke to him and said they were to have a baby, but Zachariah doubted. And so as a sign, he lost his voice. Her story gave me the boldness to try and tell my story. Elizabeth listened, and when I'd finished speaking, she nodded and said, as soon as you stepped through my doorway, the baby leapt in my womb with joy. This child will be a gift to us all. I hug my son close at this point and leave out how I burst into tears at her words. She was the first person to believe me. Instead, I tell Jesus about the olive tree I liked to rest under at their house. I talk about the work I did with my aunt, pounding grain, drying flax, helping with the cooking, caring for the goats. I talk about how I could feel him move, a flutter, a stirring. I talk about this melody in my head, which I was trying to put words to. This is the next gift I give my son, the song I was given, inspired by the Spirit of God, a song that begins like this, my soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Saviour, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. My son smiles. He knows this song well. I've sung it to him many times, while walking back and forth, rocking him to sleep, singing it as I cook and clean this little place we've been staying in, while also trying to keep an eye on Jesus as he started to learn how to crawl and then walk, always grabbing whatever happens to be on the floor and putting it into his mouth. Lately, he's been trying to sing the song with me. Together we sing, he has filled the hungry with good things, but has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful. I've tried to tell Jesus the stories and songs of our people. How they once lived in Egypt like we do now. How they lived as slaves and they cried out to Yahweh, the one and only ruler, full of mercy. And Yahweh heard their cries and rescued them, and he will do so again. He gives people with his presence. He delights to save. These are the gifts I give my son, the prayers and practices that draw us close to God. We've been hiding these last few years here in Egypt, not from our families, I reassure my son, but from Herod, the pretend king, the false king working under Emperor Augustus. He's fearful. He knows that God will act to bring him down, so we have been waiting, waiting for a sign it is safe for us to return home. In the early hours of the mornings, when my son still sleeps, my husband and I have this small window of time when we gather together and we pray. We cry out to Yahweh for deliverance for our people, for an end to Roman occupation in our land, for justice and grace to come. We cry out to see our loved ones again, for God's kingdom to come and for provision in the meantime. Do you do that? God has sustained us in our time of isolation. We've even found a synagogue where we can worship. Jesus, I can see, already loves God. He has such wonder and curiosity and loves to pray with me. These are the gifts I pass on to my son, Joseph. I don't know how I would have been able to have done this without Joseph. From the moment he turned up at my aunt and uncle's house with the news that an angel had visited him in his dreams, confirmed all that I had said, he's been in. He was the one that knew we needed to flee to Egypt, knew it wasn't safe for us to stay, and he's the one who's worked so hard so we could get by. It has stretched us as a couple. I knew Joseph, I mean, it's a small village, and I was so excited when we became engaged, but I don't think I really appreciated how good a man he is. Maybe you don't know until you've been tested, but he is a good man. Coming back and marrying me, for leaving his family behind and taking the risk to start again in Egypt. And he loves Jesus. I see how much he loves him, allowing him to climb onto his back and wrestle. He'll even get up at night when Jesus is screaming and refusing to go to sleep. He'll try and soothe him. When he's at home, Jesus follows him all over the place. Loves playing with his tools, loves pretending to be a builder, just like his father. My son is almost asleep. He's rubbing his eyes and they're starting to close. I'm almost at the end. I speak about how we traveled to Bethlehem, trying to find a place where we could stay. How we kept looking for a kind stranger who would take us in, but all the houses are full. Finally, we found shelter. And there you were born, dear one, in a dry cave near the animals. There's a midwife available and she assisted. Told me what I already knew, that I had a beautiful baby boy. We wrapped you in swaddling strips, wiping you down first with oil and salt and warm water before laying you in my arms. I stopped speaking and listened to my son breathing deeply. That moment feels a little unreal now. Even Nazareth feels unreal to me. Gotten used to our routines in this place. I haven't seen an angel since that day I walked into an empty room in my old family home. And we haven't heard from God, not really. These last few years, it's just been trying to get by day. Perhaps this is another gift I can give my son, a normal life. Sometimes the day is celebrating a milestone. There he is, rolling onto his belly, moving himself forward. There he is, teething, eating solids. And some days are hard and long and boring, just watching him banging pots together or playing the same games over and over. I extract myself away from my son and tuck him in. I know I should rest too. Jesus is so active. It is hard work keeping up with him sometimes. He's definitely not a baby anymore. There's still parts I haven't told him completely. About the shepherds who came to visit soon after his birth, speaking of angels filling the skies, of the magi, mysterious men bringing gifts and wanting to worship my child. Seeing the ship taking grain to the emperor brings those memories to mind. I ponder the angel's words once more. He'll be called Son of the Most High. He'll inherit the throne of David and establish an everlasting kingdom. He'll be a gift not just to you, but to many people. And you are to name him Jesus. God saves. They're heavy words. Mysterious words. The door opens and I see Joseph coming home from work. I sit with him, sharing a meal. Joseph speaks. He tells me the rumors we have heard are true. Herod is dead. It could be time for us to return home soon. I've been waiting for this news for so long, but now I find myself not wanting to rush, but to linger and savor these times I have with Jesus. After calling on God to act for so long, now I want to say not to hurry. It can all wait. Do you know that feeling? I've tried and will continue to try to pass all these gifts to Jesus. I know he'll need them for what lies ahead. Somehow he'll save these people. Maybe one day there'll be crowds feasting and celebrating his coronation, bringing gifts to him. It seems hard to fathom. But no matter what happens next, hard or good, no matter how sleep deprived I am, no matter what others might think, I love my son. He is a gift. One day he's going to be a ruler like no other.